Hello, and welcome back to the Be Unbound podcast. I'm your co-host, David Rethemeyer.
And I'm your co-host, Jonathan Brush.
And as of the airing of this episode, it will be Christmas Eve. We are recording this quite a bit earlier, however, because we hope that we, along with the rest of you, are going to be taking a much-needed holiday break and are able to celebrate Christmas with your families. And so we are taking a little bit of a break from recording podcasts, but we wanted to make sure that you have some content to listen to. So we are continuing, as we did last week, in bringing back some of the most requested and most downloaded episodes from this past year. And so we are going to be bringing back this conversation that we had about the concept of adulting. And so we'll just let you jump in and enjoy that. And we hope that if you're listening to it again, it's just as valuable. Or if you're listening to it for the first time, enjoy. It's a good one.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Be Unbound podcast. My name is Jonathan Brush, and I'm here with my co-host,
David Rethemeyer.
And along with David, we have Trent Emick back in the studio for another three-way conversation. We've been having a lot of fun doing these recently. And so just so you guys know, behind the scenes, you know, there's these topics that come up, and sometimes it's professionally, sometimes it's personally, sometimes it happens on meetings, sometimes it's all standing around in my kitchen or dining room or someplace else. And we think, man, that's a pretty good conversation. We'd like to explore that a little bit more. And now you get to hear us explore that. And so recently it was me kind of losing my head and going bananas over a subject that I find particularly annoying. And that is, I heard a podcast recently that used the term adulting. And as I was sharing with David a few minutes ago, I just have a very strong opinion that should not be ever used as a verb. And so the word itself just annoys the living daylights out of me. And so in my life, I never use the word adulting. And related to that, and there's some themes here that you'll see, I really, really despise the word teenager because of the cultural baggage that comes with it. And I actually think there's a connection between those two, but there does seem to be a moment, and it's now a moment that's lasted at least since 2020, where everywhere I go, it seems like people are really talking about the need to teach people how to adult, another term I really despise. And so this whole idea that somehow we need to do a better job, or we need to do the job, or people aren't doing the job of helping young people become adults. And so throw that out there. The first question, of course, the logical question to ask is, are either of you as annoyed as I am with the sound of that word?
I mean, I can definitely say yes.
I knew I could count on Trent to back me up here. I was expecting it. David, 50-50 over on your side. I wasn't sure if you were annoyed or not, but I knew Trent was just waiting for this. Go for it, Trent.
Oh, man. Yeah, it's one of the things that's just super symptomatic of how little our culture thinks about young people. And rather how low the opinion of young people is in the present day. And there's just this expectation that in this early portion of your life, you're not supposed to be taking responsibility, you're supposed to be goofing off. And whether that, you know, whatever that expectation was created, it's just reality now. And so instead of trying to correct that, it seems that the culture has instead decided to just accommodate that. And hence we've come up with all this verbiage like adulting that says that it's somehow exceptional to just to do normal things and behave like an adult and not be some overgrown teenager who in your early 20s is running around just chasing whatever wins you have instead of actually building for the future. So, yeah, it's grating, but it's also tragic in its own way because of how symptomatic it is of broader cultural issues and the way that we treat young people generally.
Well, let me throw this to you guys here in a second because I'd like your opinion. So I don't know if this is like a brand new thing, but I think it is a newer thing historically, right? So I don't think 75 years ago, 50 years ago, I'm not sure, I have to get my time frames right, you know, at least 50 plus years ago, I don't think this is an issue at all. And of course, you can read some pretty stunning accounts from, say, 1940s, 1950s back. This would just be a totally foreign concept. But I would say that when I was in this time period, and I would say time period from, say, you know, 16-ish to like 25, that one of the things that I noticed, and this is actually what put me on a path that led me to Unbound, was that college was this period of extended adolescence. And I've actually spoken about this a lot, and I've been on the circuit talking about this and had some lectures a lot around this. But, you know, I was observing that people were saying, hey, what happens is college is an adult-making machine. I'm going to get my kid out of high school. I'm going to put them into college. At the other end of it will come this adult. And in between, the student was saying, this is just a time for me to have an extended period of adolescence. A lot of drinking, a lot of partying, a lot of irresponsible behavior. Maybe a degree comes along in there, but the credential is going to get me a job. So I'm going to spend this 4 years having as much fun as I possibly can before I have to get into the so-called real world. And then I get a credential at the other end that moves me into it. Now, there's all kinds of problems with that. But that was kind of the way it looked from my experience. Now, both of you have had more recent experience. So, David, you know, not for you personally, because I happen to know you personally, and I don't think you struggle with this necessarily quite as much. But you know, when you looked around at your peers, what did that look like from your perspective? And then, Trent, I'd like to hear that from you as well.
So the interesting thing, I think, about the current expectations that we have, because I think that especially what Trent touched on is that there's just this mismatch of expectations that really seems to be the root of the problem here. And I think I would wager to guess, I haven't read any studies on this, full transparency. This is just David extrapolating based on his own experiences and observations of the world, is that this is kind of a sort of a generational cycle of generations previously stating that they've worked really, really hard to obtain lots of material things. There's been a lot of materialism in previous generations and a lot of focus on just doing the very best that we can to make sure that we have all the material things, and then realizing, wait a minute, that's actually not very fulfilling. And so then there's almost a backswing to saying, no, young person, don't make the same mistakes as me. Don't be over materialistic. Instead, just live it up as much as you can with experiences. And I think that this is a problem pretty much universally, no matter what culture you're in, to some extent. But I think that at different points in history, you'll find, based on the cultural moment, that it varies at different points. And I think that we're seeing that now, where there is just such an emphasis on, let's just go and get experiences. And, you know, we've talked about this on the podcast previously, that gaining experience is a great thing. Having a multitude of life experiences and a wide breadth of those is fantastic. But it's also should not come at the detriment of still looking to build the real life practical skills that you need to be able to just function in society. And I think that that's a little bit where the expectation breaks down, is that there is such high expectation for the kinds of experiences that you should have, and such a low expectation for the actual practical skills that should back that up.
So if I would kind of summarize that, David, I think you're making sort of an anti-cubicle argument. And so it would be like the previous generation, you know, worked really hard, went to college, paid all the dues, came out, got the degree, got the credential, and that put them in the cubicle form. And there was a lack of meaning of work there. And so that there's this kind of like, boy, I wish I had. And then it turns into this rosy nostalgia. Those are the days of freedom. Those are the days of fun. And then it's kind of like, hey, kid, don't do what I did. Don't waste your life, you know, working like crazy to get to the cubicle farm. Make sure that you take this time and enjoy it. And somehow along the way, that's got warped or expanded or twisted to be like, hey, you know, we have this longer period of focusing on experiences. And to both you and Trent's point, a lack of forethought about building for the future. Is that a fair, you know, summary,
yeah,
David?
Yeah, I think so. And on top of that, an observation that just tickles me to no end is just how the vast majority of the bestseller business books recently are business executives who are discovering that EQ matters and that people matter more than profits. And that's essentially just the thesis statement for 90% of the business bestseller list at this point. And I think it's a reflection of that same thing.
That's the anti-Dilbert, right? I mean, like, to quote the strip, I mean, I don't know how many people read Dilbert anymore, but the anti Dilbert. So Trent, so, you know, same question to you, kind of, what is your assessment? And I started that question with, like, you know, what did it look like for you as, you know, as your peers came through, you know, what is from your age group, what do you think that looks like in this whole sort of process of going from, I would say, to young adult to full independence?
Yeah. So there's really crucial word here that you hit on, David, that I think we need to emphasize, and that is the word experience. So a little while ago, I did a session where I did a little bit of a tongue-in-cheek portion that I called the deconstruction of YOLO. And that's because YOLO, just like adulting, is one of those words and ideas that just gets on my nerves, not only because it sounds stupid, and we went from saying cool stuff like carpe diem to saying YOLO, which is just the perfect encapsulation of the kind of Western culture, but I digress.
So Trent, YOLO stands for, I mean, we can't leave you hanging there. I mean, is this like Yoda misspelled, or what does YOLO stand for?
YOLO, so you only lived once. And that was a concept that really kind of blew up around when I was in my early teenage years, kind of became the internet meme of the day. And it has since gone from being an internet meme to a lifestyle that says that tomorrow is uncertain. There is no long-term direction or purpose to your life, so live it up while you can and pursue experiences at the cost of all else. And that is something that I have seen emphasized first by millennials as they have kind of rebelled against the workforce. But now it's just become the default thinking of Gen Z, my generation, and we're seeing all of the ramifications of that, the first one being directionless and purposelessness. Experiences, like you said, are a fine thing, but when you make experiences your purpose, then you'll ultimately rob yourself of meaning, because then you're just chasing your own desires around in a circle, and it's a downward spiral that never ends. So really, I think actually this whole idea around chasing experiences, it's not the problem facing young adults, not the only thing, but it's one of the big ones that we're seeing a lot of people be driven off the rails by, just because there's this overwhelming cultural idea that, you know, nothing ultimately matters anymore. It's got this almost nihilistic tint to it that's just kind of this leftover of postmodernism.
Yeah, so if I would summarize that, it's kind of a lack of telos, which is a lack of a purpose, a lack of an ending, a lack of a direction. So, you know, and maybe, you know, holding those together, David, you've got kind of people going, I didn't know what I was doing, but I did what everybody told me to, and I wound up in the cubicle form, right? Mm-hmm. And so this feels empty and soul-sucking. And the, you know, the other side of that is like, okay, we only live once, I have a lot of fun here. Well, oddly, having fun is soul-sucking as well, if you don't understand what you're having fun for, if you don't have, and we did a podcast about this a little bit ago about, you know, instilling meaning into everything, you know, in terms of, you know, if you ride your motorcycle, you ride to the glory of God. If you do your hobbies, you pursue to the glory of God. Like, there's something, but that is rests on, there's a purpose to something. And now you understand and can put it into context. Trent, I would say that your argument's a little bit, you know, you've got a generation of people who are pursuing as much quote unquote fun as possible, but they have no idea what it's for. And so ultimately you end up with an existential crisis. You end up with a lack of meaning. Is that a fair assessment?
No, I think that's exactly it.
So I think that I hear both of those things and agree. So I think those are good assessments. And again, I'm coming off my own thing where it's like, you know, college is a period of extended adolescence. There seems to be another piece in here when I hear all these people talking about, you know, adulting and how to adult. That on one hand, I see younger people acting like this is an extremely complicated, difficult thing. So it seems to me that there is, but that, you know, maybe that's always true. I mean, maybe becoming an independent, fully formed human, you know, who's responsible for yourself, has always been a difficult thing. But it seems to me the fear of that is somewhat new. In other words, previous generations expected that kind of challenge to come, and in fact, relished it to some point. So I think that's an aspect of it. There also seems to be like a complication piece where on one hand, there's a fear of this, like it's really difficult. And on the other, there's just a genuine lack of skills. Like that, there's a lack of connection between those where people are like, I don't actually know how to do this. So I need to do these things, but I don't know how to do these things. Have either of you observed that? Because it's, on one hand, I think you're right. You've got some of the, not metaphysical, but some of the underlying ideas and structure of why you get to this place, right? Purposelessness, a focus on experience, but not sure why, a desire to not go into something that is meaningless, but then replacing meaningless with fun, which also becomes meaningless, sure. But there's also this kind of practical gap where you've got people going, being an adult is so hard. And also, I don't know how to do it. Do you observe that as well?
I would definitely say so. I think the classic example that I see being used a lot is, I come out of high school knowing how to prove that a triangle is a triangle, but I don't know how to do my taxes,
right?
Is the foremost example of that, which I think is an interesting one to dissect, because for one thing, I think it does speak to just some of the priorities of our education system, and the fact that really the education system that we have as of right now is not really focused on real world preparation. It's much more focused on giving you the skills to succeed academically. It's giving you the skills to succeed in an academic lifestyle, not in a practical real world lifestyle. And those are two very different things. And so, yes, learning how to learn is a really important thing. And so you can gain some really valuable skills from going through and not understanding how you're going to use in the real world how to prove that a triangle is in fact a triangle using proofs. That annoyed me to death when I was taking geometry. But it was useful to be able to learn how to learn. But I think that what we're seeing is that that value is not really seen when it comes to actual young adults who are graduating high school and then saying, wait a minute, the entire purpose of this is supposed to be to equip me to be able to then go into the world and have everything, have the tool set, have the knowledge that I need to be able to actually succeed in the real world. But they didn't actually give me that toolbox. The toolbox is a lot more of a setup for college. Now, that's what a vast majority of high schools especially are designed for now, is what's the highest acceptance rate that we can get for our students to get into a college. That's the main success metric. The success metric is not, are we producing students that are actually well-rounded people who have the practical knowledge that they need to be able to be successful adults and do things like their taxes or know how things like insurance works and things like that. And so I think there is simultaneously a little bit of just a failing of just the overall design of the education system as a whole, which is one of the things that we are supremely frustrated at here at Unbound and is one of the reasons why we exist. And there's also just a little bit of a mismatch of expectations of students looking at high school and saying, like, this should give me all of the answers, and not necessarily realizing that it should be a way for you to learn how to ask better questions. And again, and that's also because the schools don't really understand that that's what they're actually doing, and that's the value that they can provide.
Yeah, so Trent, I'm going to throw this to you in a second, but... So David, I think that the argument here is that you have a high school system. So we're talking broadly as society. So mm-hmm. So maybe most of our audience, you're not quite in that system, but you're certainly going to have to deal with a society that's modeled in that system. A high school system that is designed primarily to move somebody into a college situation. And then a college situation that is designed more and more to prepare people for things that don't exist. And that would be a whole series of criticisms that we have in all kinds of presentations. And if you want to hear about those, come see any of us speaking live anywhere, and we'll be talking about it. And so there's that kind of parallel running. And then you have students who say, well, I'm going into the world and I don't know how to do things. I agree, but there does seem to be still something missing. And so, Trent, you can do whatever you want with this, but I was thinking, Trent and I have read a fairly large multi-volume biography of Churchill. We're kind of swimming in that time period a little bit. And Trent, you know, it's been a little longer since I've read it. But if I think about Churchill, here's a man who went to boarding school, which honestly has a lot more of finding the properties of a triangle than it does practical skills, right? Like there's the whole English boarding school model, especially at that time in history, is very far removed from reality. And yet, here's a young Churchill who goes through that process, his academically getting fed stuff that really doesn't apply to the vast majority of the world, and yet seems to have no problems using a Mauser machine pistol to steal a train and escape across a desert when he's imprisoned in a camp in a war zone a few years later. In other words, somehow he picks up the practical skills, and he didn't get that necessarily, or it doesn't seem to be implied. He didn't get that from the classroom setting of, I can't remember if he went to Eton or whatever the boarding school that he went to. It's now just slid my head. But anyhow, so there seems to be, yes, I'm with David. There's this academic model problem that's not producing people. So it makes total sense to me. People say, school didn't prepare me for this. But there's another missing piece in there, because previous generations also went to schools that were often far removed from reality and yet didn't seem to, you know, universally suffer this practical skills gap that we're seeing now.
Yeah, definitely. So one of the funny things about Churchill there, too, is in a way, Churchill actually never did develop what we would traditionally call practical skills, which I find kind of funny. I mean, the man never cooked a meal for himself in his entire life.
That is true. This is a man who dictated his books in the bathtub, right? So, I mean, there is there's a strong unreality there. So I maybe a poor example. Yeah.
Well, I don't think it's actually a poor example. It's a differentiation of what we would call practical skills actually look like. Because Churchill had all the skills that he needed in order to accomplish what his ultimate purpose was, which was to be the leader of England during World War II. And all of his oratorical skills, all of the skills that he developed to actually survive, stuff like you're talking about in the Boer War, all of that was actual practical skill sets. So it was just a different category. And a lot of that came out of just the fact that not to go back to this again, but he had a very clearly defined purpose. He knew that his purpose was to be a great leader, and he was pretty clear about that from early on in life. The entire reason he went to the Boer War and enlisted in the military in the first place was to get enough glory for himself so he could run for parliament and then actually get a seat and then eventually work his way up to becoming prime minister. He knew that that was his purpose from the beginning. And so there is that piece here that says, if we can give young adults purpose, then the practical skill sets are a natural thing that follows. And that if you know what you are trying to accomplish, you are naturally going to develop the skill sets that you need in order to accomplish that thing. You are naturally going to, provided that you are driven to do so. And another little piece here that I think is also crucial when we're talking about education systems and what's changed today and why young adults are this way, there is this new generational disconnect that we're starting to see really highlighted in Gen Z, where I don't think we've seen a generation in quite some time that has been so disconnected from their grandparents particularly, and even their parents to some degree. And I heard a perspective on this a little while ago that was a lot of that is because of technology, and young adults throughout human history, traditionally it's been if you have a problem, you ask your parents how they overcame that problem. And young adults feel like because of technology, because of things like social media, they're coming upon problems that their parents never did. And so they feel like in some ways they actually are more in tune with reality than their parents are, and they actually know more than their parents are, and therefore they don't take their parents' advice. And there's a lot of foolishness to that because all problems ultimately come from similar archetypes. And so, yeah, your dad may not have had to overcome the problems of social media, but your dad did have to figure out social situations quite a bit. And so there is still wisdom there that's transferable. But that attitude has created this disconnect that's made the current generation somewhat isolated from their forefathers.
We know it's tough to find the right resources for your high schooler. That's where Equip by Unbound comes in. This program for 9th through 11th graders combines Christian worldview training, coaching, and hands-on projects that help students apply what they're learning in real life. By year's end, they'll have stronger skills, clearer direction, and more confidence for what's ahead. Prices are going up soon, so now's the time. Learn more at beunbound.us/equip.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting observation. You know, to put that in the short term, you know, in the past, you had a problem and you don't know how to deal with things that you're faced with. You ask your parents, you ask somebody older. Now you get faced with things and it's because it's often technology driven or technology derived or technology disrupted, your default thought is not to go to that person. And then you go where? You don't know. Maybe Reddit. Maybe YouTube. And then all of a sudden you get this kind of, this thing is really complicated. It's really difficult because it does look like a complete mystery because nobody's sitting there leading the way. I think that's actually a pretty powerful observation, Trent. Well, let's take the corner here and think about this because, you know, when I see things like this, sure, I think this is fascinating to go through this and discuss the reasons for it. I think, and you have to discuss the reasons, as we've just done here, to understand what to do about it. But I don't want to stop there. I want to know what can I do about it, right? What is the answer to this? And there's can be a lot of complication to this. And obviously, there's a lot of nuance and there's a lot of pieces. But what I find is that, you know, there's a little bit of a devolvement of the conversation where it's things like, you know, well, young people these days don't know how to change tires. And then the next thing you know is it's like, you know, you have a manhood class that focuses primarily on using hammers and changing tires. Now, I don't know that that's bad. I just think that it's simplistic in terms of a solution, right? I mean, that may be a specific skill set that's not a bad thing to know, but it doesn't seem to me to be really getting at the heart of stuff. So here's my shot at it, and I'd like to hear you guys' thought of this as well. When I think about this in my own life as I raise children, in my professional life as I, you know, train young adults to thrive through Unbound, and then just thinking about this in terms of, you know, how do I interact with people in my church and in my community in a way that is helpful and useful, I come back to something we've said a couple of times here. You know, step number one is that none of this works, and doesn't matter how many practical skills you have if you don't have a telos, if you don't have a purpose, right? Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't. Nobody cares about changing tires if you don't want to drive anywhere. And so there's a starting point here, which is what is the purpose? And I would argue that one of the things that I've seen is that in the past, purpose has been conflated with vocation or occupation, and maybe more importantly, conflated with occupation. And so we've told young people their purpose is to be a lawyer, to be a doctor, to be a blank, to be a businessman, to be a whatever, okay? And it's all defined by an occupation. Now we're in a world where occupations change quite frequently. Technologies disrupt that, and it's left everybody sort of unmoored. And I think that's where, as Christians, we have the significant advantage. For a Christian, your purpose never has had anything to do with occupation and vocation. your occupation, vocation, no matter what it is, has everything to do with your purpose. And if that sounds contradictory, let me like go back and break that down a little bit. You know, your purpose is not derived from your occupation or vocation. Your occupation or vocation is derived from your purpose, and it doesn't matter what you do because your purpose oversees that. And the explanation of this would be, as Christians, our purpose is to love the Lord our God with all our heart, mind, and soul, and our neighbor as ourself. And various denominations state that in slightly different ways, but all basically come back to that point. So it is to love God, and it's to love others as yourself. And what does it mean to love God? It's to do his commands and to carry out his work. And then now, occupation, vocation, anything that does not conflict with God's laws and that carries out God's work, which is to lead to human flourishing and help other people and serve others the way that, you know, treat other people the way you want to be treated, show Christ's love to them, that's the way you carry that out right then. So your purpose now is something that can be applied and infused into everything that you do. And of course, it gives you a sorting mechanism to know the things what not to do. And so I'd say that, you know, the first practical piece here is just to understand teaching young people that this is a purpose that is big enough to serve them for not just the rest of their life, but for all of eternity. And that it is one that is many faceted, which means they don't have to do it just one way. That becomes an organizing sort of lodestar, you know, point, navigation point, a true north, that you can then make sense of everything else. And then things flow from that. So before I go to the next part there, you know, does that make sense? Or would you have anything to add to that? Because both of you have taken errors. I've been talking at various points. I know you got stuff to say.
Yeah, I think the purpose piece is critical in making sure that you actually have a right understanding of why you're doing the things that you're doing. Because, you know, to go back to our earlier analysis of the problem of either going to just your occupation or going to just experiences, if you're relying on either one of those to be able to help you find a sense of direction or be able to feel like you are a successful adult, then both of those are going to let you down if you don't have a actual purpose to it. And I think the things that I would add on to that, in addition to that, would be just because the, you know, like having a purpose and then like you go, okay, I know that there is a purpose to what I am building towards. And, you know, we would argue as a very unashamedly Christian organization that is ultimately to glorify God, build his kingdom, and love others as he has called us to love them. And so then from that, how do we do that practically? And as far as just practical skills building, for one thing, that's something that we teach a lot about in Unbound as far as looking to gain real world experiences. So, hey, here's a little bit of an early plug if you have somebody who's looking for that. But two, I think just as a general piece to this is that really it should feel challenging to some extent. I think whenever you're coming across a new thing that you have to learn how to do, and I think that's something that sense of challenge, that sense of overwhelm of I have no idea how this works, let me leverage all of the tools that I have to figure that out, is something that I think to some extent, because we have such an aversion to just a feeling of unequippedness, and like we talked about recently, a feeling of effortlessness, that feels bad now in a lot of modern culture. And I think that to pushing back against that is just that, yeah, figuring out things and figuring out how to be a successful adult is hard a lot of the time. And it's half the battle is just saying, okay, yeah, this is hard. What do I do about it? How do I overcome it? Who are the people that I have who can help me to overcome that? What are the resources that I have at my disposal? What are the skills I already have? What are the skills that I need to overcome this? And just realizing that just because something is hard does not mean it's overcomable. And a lot of the time, pushing through that feeling of discomfort is the key to actually feeling like a successful adult. And it's unfortunately, like, and I think to some extent, unfortunately and fortunately, we can't really rely on our education system at this point to give our up and coming young adults that skill set and the ability to look at those hard things in the face and say, yeah, but this is worth overcoming. And so I think that we're going to need to just be very conscious of encouraging that in the circles where we have influence going forward.
That part about, you know, hard things, I think that's the second part, right? So the first is you have to have a telos, you have to have a purpose. The second is, yeah, hard things are going to come, and we should not, you know, our children, our young people should not be surprised by the fact that hard things are coming. Then the question is, how do you prepare them for hard things? Well, yeah, you might teach them specific skills, and that's always a good thing. And there's, you know, as David mentions, we teach specific skills in Unbound, and as a family, we teach specific skills, and you ought to teach them specific skills, and it ought to include things like doing taxes and balancing checkbooks and all that kind of stuff. But I think that the key to that, if you're going to break it down to the most practical, easiest next step piece, is give responsibility. And I would say, as somebody who observes a lot of parents and a lot of children, a lot of interactions, and then deals with students at the other end, both the good ones and the ones that have troubles and struggles, the difference between all of them is those who are given responsibility as early as possible are capable of doing hard things. And I don't want to oversimplify this, but I would just say that it is a complicated world. You are not going to be equipped to prepare your child for everything that comes. And to think that, you know, like, I've got a checklist and I do this. Okay, kid, you're ready to go. That's unrealistic. It's not that it won't be helpful, and I'm not saying you shouldn't do some aspect of that, but that's not going to be the full picture. The real picture is, how early can you give a child responsibility? And if you're thinking about, you know, I'm not a parent, I'm thinking about I'm an employer or something like that. Okay, well, how fast can you give an employee responsibility? The faster people are given responsibilities and opportunities to fail, and somebody that will help teach them, instruct them, coach them through so that, you know, the failure stings as little as possible and the success is more probable, that's how we build skills. That's how we build responsibility. And that's ultimately how we train adults, because the definition for me of an adult is, you know, I said earlier that I despise the term teenager because of cultural baggage. In my house, I have children. They generally last until about 12 years of age. Then I have young adults. Young adults are adults. They're no longer children. And the difference point there is that I expect my young adults to pick up increasing amounts of responsibility until they're fully independent, at which point they become fully a full adult. And, you know, there is no gap in between there. You're a child, which means you have to rely on others. You're a young adult, which means you're starting to take responsibility for yourself. You're a full adult, which means you take full responsibility for yourself. Trent, we might give you the final word here, buddy.
Yeah, so I agree with everything that has been said. And just kind of maybe a little bit of a way to think about this whole idea of particularly giving responsibility to young people earlier and earlier. The hardest thing that you have ever overcome in your life is the hardest thing that you've ever overcome in your life. There is kind of this sense out there that we look at young adults today and we say, oh, they're so fragile, they're so weak. Well, whose fault is that? It's the people who didn't challenge them in the first place, because resilience is not something that you just develop overnight. It's something that you inculcate by, you know, just like if you would envision it through exercise, adding a little bit of weight at a time until eventually you become a stronger individual. And we've now delayed that process to where we have people who are adults who have not gone through that traditional process of developing resilience and therefore developing the ability to be responsible individuals who can actually go out and make their way in the world and embrace that idea of having purpose and actually trying to make an impact. So, yes, there is this element of we need to be able to go to young people and say, you need to be more resilient, but we also need to be cautious about not telling them to magically fix it overnight. And it's just shouting at them isn't going to be the thing that solves the problem. What we need to instead do is embrace a process by which we can guide them through taking on little bits of responsibility at a time, becoming more and more independent and more actualized. And then through that process, perhaps we can accelerate because they're a little bit older, they'll eventually get to the place where they need to be and they'll actually be able to be true adults.
Well, I think that is pretty good final word. So good job summarizing and taking us across the finish line there, Trent. Thank you for listening. There's an exciting piece here. I mean, first of all, the stakes are high. I mean, if we're going to continue as a civilization, we have to turn children into adults. And we're not doing a particularly great job of that on a society level. The good news is you don't fix it on a society level except by doing it at a personal level. So if you're listening to this, you can be part of the solution. And that is, of course, if you have children of your own, if you are a young adult attempting to become an adult or an adult attempting to become a better adult, or even somebody, you know, if you're involved in any community at all, at the heart of being involved in a community is playing some role in taking children through to adults. And so, you know, whatever you are, whatever you're doing, my challenge to you would be get involved in that in some fashion, in some process. This is civilization building work, and it doesn't get more important. It doesn't get more basic than this. And frankly, it doesn't get more rewarding and more exciting than this. And we can tell you that from literal professional experience. We hope you enjoyed one of our favorite podcasts on one of our topics that is a favorite one for us, even if we don't like that adulting word, which I believe we mentioned in the podcast probably several times. Because that's what happens anytime we talk about that word. We hope that you're about to have, if you're listening to Christmas Eve or afterwards, that you had about to have a wonderful Christmas, or you had a wonderful Christmas. We'll look forward to talking to you, interacting with you in the new year. But as we finish this out, just one last quick reminder that as we slide into the end of the year, we've still got an ear to the phones, not today on Christmas Eve and not tomorrow on Christmas, but the days afterwards. If you're interested in enrolling in Unbound, let us know, because there is a difference in price between 2025 and 2026. And if you are interested and you're planning on doing it, we just assume you got the smaller price. And so contact us if you're interested in that. But either way, we hope that you have a blessed and wonderful holiday season, and we'll look forward to seeing you in 2026. Until then, be unbound.
My name is Micaiah McClellan, and I am a Foundations alumni. That is quite a mouthful. So I did ascend last year, and I am actually enrolled this year as a Challenge student, which is the year two program. And I'm here to tell you what the results are based off of my own experience and how I did ascend and what that impacted and how that really honestly changed my life and the trajectory of where I was going. When I enrolled last year in ascend, I had no idea what I was getting myself into. And I mean that in the best sense. I had no sense of direction. I was very lost. I didn't have a good base on which to lay a foundation on. Hence the name Foundation Student. That was not on purpose. I really didn't though. And I was very lost. And I was struggling to find a community that I wanted to be in. I never wanted to go to college. That was never something that I desired. The campus life is definitely not for me. And I just had absolutely no clue what I was going to do. I quite literally stumbled onto Unbound, and I enrolled late in the semester. So I actually went to Apex, which is our first event of the year, not knowing anything about anything. And come to find out, after that week had gone by, I loved it so much that I couldn't imagine my life without these people in it. I received so much love and a sense of direction and a sense of hope. And that really gave starter to the fire of where I needed to go. I enrolled late, like I said, and I started off the year kind of understanding what I was doing. Not really. I kind of had a lot of things going on, a lot on me all at once. But it was one of the best decisions I could have made. So if you're thinking about enrolling in Ascend, I say do it. And especially if you don't actually have a direction, or if you don't even know what next year is going to look like, it is going to give you a vision for the year. It is going to give you a goal to pursue. You're going to learn so much that you can actually apply to your life. A lot of what they teach out there nowadays is garbage. You're not going to use it in real life. And the skills that you learn with Ascend are going to be impacting your life for years to come. I learned things from last semester that I still apply to this day. The leadership classes that they teach are so impactful, and I couldn't recommend it more. I know that it could be scary. For me, it was. And I pray that the Lord would guide whatever decision you're going to make. But if you're not sure what this year is going to look like, and if you need a sense of direction, and you want something that is going to challenge you and also push you to grow closer to the Lord and give really good results, I think Ascend is an excellent option for that, and I hope that you enroll. Yeah. Bye.